He is Robin Leach. He is Jada Markin.
This is Car Keys.
Good day to our listeners on Car Keys, this week's version of Car Keys with Jada Markin and Robin Leach. Jay is going to start this show because he's had a very interesting experience, possibly purchasing a Rivian, which he's been talking about for some time. So let's go and hear about it. First of all, where did you do this?
So I signed up. You know, Rivian is just like Tesla. It's a there are no dealerships. There are a bunch of stores around the country. And I went online and registered and paid my $100. And that buys you a reservation and the right to order a vehicle. And I know people who've been on that list for over a year, close to 2 years now, ever since they've announced the Rivian R2. So the R2 is the second model in the Rivian lineup, the first one being the R1S and R1T. So the two vehicles, the SUV and the pickup truck, which are two larger vehicles that we've seen on the roads here for a few years now. And people who have them love them. And we both know people who have them. And the reviews are overall pretty good. Nothing but good, actually. The R1 is a body-on-frame vehicle, so a little bit like a Chevy Tahoe or Suburban, like a Toyota Land Cruiser. The R2 is a more is a car-like unibody, so totally different design, but the looks of the vehicle is identical. Anyway, so I signed up, paid the $100, and as part of that, you can go and schedule a demo drive at one of the Rivian centers, which is, so I wanted to do one over the weekend or before the weekend, and so I went online, and the only available or the most convenient time slot anyway was at Rivian Center down in White Plains. And okay. Rivian, just like Lucid and Tesla, I believe, have stores in the Westchester Mall in White Plains, which I had not been in a mall in some time. So just that was a pretty unique again experience of going in a brick and mortar a shopping mall that actually looks pretty modern and up to date. The Rivian store was nice. I got in the store, was greeted very nicely, and I had a 6:30 p.m. reservation on Friday, and got there about 15 minutes beforehand. Chit chat with the sales guy, and who actually came with me on the test drive. Most people actually get the keys to the vehicle and are let loose on their own. For some reason, maybe I didn't look trustworthy.
They saw you.
They saw me, and the guy said, no, I'm coming with you. And I was like, okay, good. I want you to come with me because I have a lot of questions. I don't know the area. I want you to take me on, you know, certain roads. And so we went off, it was a interesting drive, to say the least.
You were driving, I take it.
Yes, I was driving right from the start, but, you know, and I'm not familiar with, you know, Rivian, like Tesla, like a bunch of other electric vehicles. You know, there's a whole, there's a learning curve and how to, you know, use the system and the software. So I, you know, having only, you know, I thought would be 10, 15 minutes, turned out I had a half an hour in driving the vehicle. You know, I was assisted by this salesman in getting all the functions to work the way I wanted them to. And overall, it was a pleasant experience. I've driven a few electric vehicles, never owned one, but I've driven a Tesla S, I've driven a Tesla Y, I've driven a Chevy Bolt, I've driven an Ioniq 5, and more recent Mercedes EQS. I've driven the Lucid Air. I've driven a few Porsche Macans, quite extensively actually, and fairly or not fairly, that the Macan was my reference my comparison point. And it is not a fair comparison because, you know, the Rivian R2 retails for, depending on the version, between $50,000 and $60,000, whereas the Macan is anywhere north of $90,000. So comparison, you know, it's the same size vehicle, but not at all the same price range.
Well, how about driving comparisons?
So, you know, I'm also part of I've been on Facebook and a bunch of Rivian enthusiasts and R2 wannabe owners and Rivian R1 owners and a bunch of people who've commented on their experience with both the Rivian R1 and also, you know, their impressions after driving the R2 and, you know, like me in the demo drives. So I was quite excited. And Car and Driver and other magazines have test driven the R2 and everybody loves it. And I have to say, I don't love it. I mean, it's a, you know, very competent vehicle. I think it's gonna be huge as far as sales. The direct comparison is the Tesla Y, and a lot of people who are test driving the R2 are people coming out of a Tesla Y, and all of them love it. But I just compared as a driving experience compared to the Macan. That's just no comparison in my mind. But, you know, I like driving cars. And
Jay, can I say to our listeners, does it compare, what compares favorably to it, the Macan in other electric vehicles, a Tesla?
Nothing.
Nothing?
Nothing.
Okay, so you can't.
No, okay. I know. I'm being totally honest about it. I think it's a very competent vehicle. It did everything well. It is comfortable. I can see that people who are taller and larger are very comfortable in that vehicle. It actually, when you sit in it, it has that spacious feel. And it reminds me a little bit of my Touareg in the sense that it's a big vehicle, big seats. But I drove it in sport mode, so you can put the steering and the suspension in sport mode, and neither of which felt really very sporty. But then again, it's not a sports car. I mean, I'm being unfair in trying to compare to to a sporty vehicle. I was just hoping. I also drove the all their demo drivers are the performance version of the car. And it's a 650 horsepower car. I mean, we're talking 0 to 60 in 3.5 seconds. And even though it felt very quick, I'd be hard pressed to say it was any faster than a Macan, the Macan is. I mean, the Macans are quote unquote only 400 and 500 horsepower respectively, and they felt at least as fast.
They are at least as fast. You're saying that. The question is 3.5 seconds fast enough for any car?
No, don't get me wrong. The car is plenty fast enough, okay? There is absolutely no need to have a faster car. I got passed on a non-ramp on 287 by a brand new Corvette C8. And I told the sales guy next to me, I said, hold on, I have to take this guy on. And so went through the corner, tried to follow the Corvette, accelerated on the on-ramp, only to find out that all the Rivian demo vehicles are governed at 80 miles an hour. So I lost the race.
But will you keep up until you got to 80?
Kind of. Okay. Yes. Yeah. Okay. So it's a very competent vehicle. There's a lot of room in it. The pricing is right on the money. And I'm sure they'll sell a ton of them. I think in the end, it's just not for me. But again, not bashing the vehicle at all. The purchasing experience, I think, is pretty interesting. I mean, you get on the list. I'm now waiting for my time slot, so I will get an invite sometime in the foreseeable future. I don't know if it's days or weeks, but I will get an invitation. I will be given a date as to when I will be able to order the vehicle. So in the next few days or weeks, I will get an email saying, hey, sometime in February of 2027, you will get an invite to order your vehicle.
So let me interrupt you for our listeners. So that means that if you decided you wanted to buy one, you are down far, as far down on the list of people waiting to buy an R2, so that it, you're telling me that February of 27 might be a realistic time you could get it. It might be,
but I see people posting on Facebook who either got their time slots already, although they signed up not too long ago, and others have been waiting a much longer time and are waiting or have to wait a much longer. So I don't know if there's any rhyme. I'm sure there's a rhyme and reason to the wait lines, but I'm actually hoping I don't have to make a decision to purchase anytime soon, because even if I were to purchase a vehicle, and I'm at this point inclined not to purchase it, I don't need the vehicle until sometime next year. So
could you sell your place in line to me?
Cannot do that. Okay. That is something you cannot do. I would have to purchase the vehicle and then sell it to you. It's not transferable.
Okay. Did you tell us that you have driven an R1?
So after driving the R2, I asked them if they had an R1S, the SUV. It just so happened it was out on the road, but there was an R1T, so the truck version of it. So I drove the R1, the truck version, and I thought it drove very much the same way. Sure. I did not feel any noticeable difference, although they're two very different vehicles. So I think the R1S is known to drive, have a pretty nice ride. And so I think the R2's, the ride in the R2 is good. There's no doubt about it. I thought the truck drove very much in a similar way. And it feels the same. The space inside the cabin feels very much the same. So the R2 is a little smaller. It rides very well. And again, it's a competent vehicle. I think at that price point, they'll sell a gazillion of them, but it's just not for me.
Did you happen to look at the range that the vehicle you tested had on it when
yes.
you started? And so, when it was at the end and how much voltage you used?
I think we left with about 200 miles range. I drove it in sport mode and we came back and there was like 150 mile range. And then we looked at the consumption and you could see on the graph the day's consumption. So all the test drives and then mine and then, you know, when I drove it, there was definitely a peak in consumption. Like I consumed about twice as much energy as anybody else.
You chased a Corvette up to 80 miles an hour. So that's going to draw a lot of power in a very short order, correct?
Correct. Yeah. But, you know, you do that with a gas powered car, too. I mean, if you drive gas powered car, you know, hard, you're going to get half the gas mileage you're getting when you're driving it, you know, conservatively. So,
well, this goes to a comment I can insert here for our listeners in it, but what are we, when we're buying our electric cars, driving like as opposed to when we didn't have an electric car? Are we actually chasing racing speeds in short order and doing 0 to 60 starts from stoplights?
No, that gets old very fast.
Trying to conserve the electricity to get the 300 miles that theoretically might be gettable if you didn't jab at the accelerator to the floor every time you started up.
The 0 to 60s in 3 seconds, you know, those things get old very quickly. I mean, I think from my driving an electric vehicle, my experience is that it's nice to have the power when you need it.
Right.
Like if you want to make a pass, it makes passes very safe because you just hammer it and get the pass done and that's it. And pass and forget. I just think it's nice to be as smooth as possible, and that's the thing. The electric vehicle is smooth and quiet in a way that no gas car can be. So I think that's how you drive an electric car, and I think that's how people drive in general. And I've done a bunch of drives to New York and back driving electric vehicles, so always kind of mindful of the range, and just drive normally. And
Can I interrupt for our listeners? Would you say the Rivian R2 compared to your Mercedes SQ, whatever it was, electric vehicle?
I haven't driven the EQS in a while, but again, the EQS is also a $100,000 vehicle. Now,
I know that, but just how does it drive? I don't care what the price is.
it's the EQS is, to me, probably the best ride. I mean, the EQS is like driving an S-Class Mercedes. I mean, comfort and ride do not get any better than in those vehicles, period. And here's the thing, and then this is where I always go, if you look at the price of used vehicles and specifically electric vehicles, you can get 2023's Mercedes EQSs, Lucid Airs, for a fraction of the price of what they cost new. And to me, that's still the way to go. Oh, by the way, I also had a long conversation with somebody who has a Lucid Air, so the sedan Lucid that's been on the market for a few years, and he has the second to most powerful version. It's like around 850 horsepower. And this person is not a car guy like we are, but has owned before that, owned several Mercedes Class S's. So, he came from a luxury vehicle, a luxury Mercedes, into a
The
Lucid
luxury
Air,
Lucid.
and absolutely loves it and gets 500 miles of range with his Lucid. And, to him, that is the best driving vehicle, period.
Understood and appropriate. Now, how does this drive compared to your Touareg, or how does your Touareg drive compared to the R2 riding?
Very much the same way. And again, my Touareg is not
No. I know. Just forget about the price and what it is.
no. It's not a sporty vehicle,
Yeah,
right? It's
I understand
comfortable.
that.
It,
But
it's
were
a
you expecting the R2 to be a sporty vehicle, or were you expecting it to be a utilitarian type of
Well,
vehicle
that's the
like
thing.
your Touareg is?
I guess I expected the performance version of it to be somewhat sporty, especially in sport mode and with 21-inch wheels and tires. And it just isn't. And that's fine. Again, it's totally fine. It's gonna be,
It was
90% of the
comfortable
people
in
out.
sport mode as opposed to being rigid in sport mode, is what I think you'd be alluding to if you were thinking for a sporty suspension performance aspect to that vehicle going around corners, even like armor,
Yeah, but that
armor.
this is where like a Porsche Macan, electric Macan, ticks all the boxes, because it handles like a sports. I mean, it's very tight in handling, and yet it's comfortable. Both the seats and the ride are comfortable. Hard to explain, but it's just the way it is. But again, you're talking 100 grand versus 50 to 60 grand. Anyway, so much for that experience. What do you have for us, Robin?
Well, here I read Motor Trend's latest stuff on online. Was the one headlined as follows: 2025 Kia 4LX year-long review. Why does a $25,000 car need a $275 oil change? Boy, is that a grabber of a headline for somebody like me. And for our listeners, this happened to be, I think it was electric. Well, maybe it was gas because it had an oil change. Why does Kia need a $275 oil change? I would equate that kind of price to Audis, Mercedes, BMWs vehicles when they go into the dealerships for their periodic similar oil change situation. You used to be able to drive into a non-dealership oil change and you'd get a $69.95 estimate for an oil change in sort of normal driving cars.
You can still
Car
do that.
stuff was wonderful to read, Jay, and you should read it. But he was griping about oil changes now costing between $200 and $300 for standard cars, as standard as a Kia, a VW, and the like. And I recently had one of my Audis go down to an Audi dealer for its 40,000-mile oil service. And it was quoted to me to be $425. And I started balking at that. And then
hold on for just a second. Why do you bring your Audi to an Audi dealership?
Well, because it's a certified used vehicle, and it, unfortunately, it didn't come with two free oil changes and a certified used age, which was 30,000+ miles when it was purchased. But it did. I will say I got the whole thing down to $275 because of certain coupons I discovered were available through the Audi system that would apply to my vehicle. But one part of it was a brake fluid change, which ended up being under $100, but was quoted on the service thing, which would have put it up to $700, as $325 to change brake fluid, which incidentally, Audi recommends every 2 years. I have not changed oil brake fluid in many of my vehicles since I've owned them. And that includes a 2014 Jeep with 135,000 miles. Now, I'm either neglecting something that, Jay, you may want to comment on, should be very important, or else we are being charged excessively at intervals that don't need to be followed in a two-year situation, as opposed to maybe a mileage thing like 100,000 miles you should change, I think, transmission fluid or something in some of these newer cars.
I think comment? There's a happy medium. There's a happy medium. I think changing fluids and especially oils, brake fluids is a good thing. Now, doing it every other oil change is kind of ridiculous. I think dealerships are going to take advantage of you.
Well,
every day of the week.
Well, okay,
that's just the way it is.
Let's go. Let's look at the next part of that part. When you walk into a new car dealership service center, the first thing I look at is something up on a wall which tells you what their labor rate is for an hourly rate. And I will tell you, my limited knowledge is mainly limited to Audi. I can't equate a BMW and a Mercedes-like kind visit and viewing. But I believe the service rate at the Audi dealer that I was dealing with was like $185 an hour. So how long does it take to change your oil? Well, minimum oil changes at the Jeep dealer that I get my oil changes done there at is at least an hour. I've gone and sat for those because the dealerships are all too far away for you to just go down and have somebody come down and bring you back and then bring you back to pick the car up. So I have never seen it come out in under an hour and 15 or 20 minutes. And so I dropped the Audi off this time because I just wasn't going to wait. And because they said something like 3 hours to do everything they wanted to do for 40,000 miles. But still, for a Kia, if the dealers are enabling themselves, part of it was for putting in fluids that the author of this article said cost $8 a bottle at a auto parts store, and to pour it in and all that. And I think he was trying to, I don't know what his service slip was broken down, but it was $75 for the charge for this special liquid that was supposed to be added to the oil. You know, all these little things add up. So I would say to listeners, if you are buying newer cars these days and you are using, and you're going to give it proper interval needed service like oil changes, you're no longer going to get, at least at new car dealers, oil changes for under $100.
All right. We live in a remote area where there are not many dealers, right? I mean, there's one in Millerton, a Ford dealer in Millerton. But other than that, you have to go to Torrington or you have to go further away.
Correct.
So a lot of people in our area, tri-state area, are going to go to independent shops. And I think it's important to know.
Lots of them, and they're good. And they're not charging that kind of price.
Hold on. Well,
You're only getting charged that kind of price because you're going into those dealerships. My whole point is, I remember over 10 years ago, I helped my daughter buy her first certified pre-owned Subaru, and we bought it in Long Island. And so my question to the sales guy was like, okay, so the warranty applies, you know, do we have to come and service it here, or can we have it serviced at any Subaru dealership? And the sales guy was very honest and kind of knew he's never going to see us again. He says, "You not only do you not have to come here, you don't need to go to any Subaru dealer. You can go to any independent shop.
Correct.
As long as you can as long as you can demonstrate that you have followed the guidelines, the manufacturer's guidelines, you can even do the oil changes yourself if you keep a notebook and document
it." That's true.
So,
but you need to
The whole point of driving to a dealership to have your oil changed is because you want free coffee or a bottle of water and a fireplace going on in the middle of summer. But other than that, there's not really much of a reason to go to a dealership to get an oil change. But that's just the way I look at it.
I think my attitude about if you're going to buy a car new, you should at least use the dealership service or the manufacturer's service centers of the same car throughout the warranty period of your vehicle, especially since a lot of them are offering two or three free oil changes for the first 30,000 miles or so. I know VW does that. But aside from that, it's just that I was shocked that that's what a car is, what I consider to be as simple as a Kia, and maybe it isn't simple. It costs only $25,000 needed oil change that was being billed out at $275 for this particular car that this particular author had for this magazine's motoring period of time. And so I think it's just for our listeners' use, I don't know what the listeners are generally paying. What do you pay for your Touring to get an oil change?
Not $275.
Right. Okay. And also I would say to our listeners, look at what they're giving you for the money that they're going to say they're going to charge you for the charge. Are there going to be additives put in? And most additives aren't needed, as this author said. They are gimmicks to make profit. I don't know why he never knew enough about this to question it, unless he was doing an article for this particular reason to see just how much he could learn about what dealers are trying to do to the customer once they buy a car, and a car lesser than, let's say, the BMW, Mercedes, Audi level of vehicles or Lucid level of vehicles. And there was a comment about an electric car that this magazine tried out that they were charging them for. An electric car doesn't need any oil changes, but it does.
I was going to mention that.
Periodic services. And I don't know what you do, but he was complaining about an alleged charge for an electric car, some 20,000 mile or 10,000 mile service that was over $200, and he couldn't figure out what that was being done to authorize $200+ bill at the end of it. So I guess it's just the reality of being 2026 and going forward for our listeners that the costs have gone up along with the cost of purchasing cars. And used cars if you go to the wrong oil change place, you may get, maybe you get ripped off. Yes, Jay?
It's all about finding a shop that you trust and sticking with it. I mean, I know I go to a shop where the guys know my cars and different people work on my different cars. And I mean, you have that too. You work with independent shops for some of your vehicles, and the guys know your cars and
the whole point of this last dialogue for our listeners is that it used to be easy to go get. You'd see signs out on new car dealerships, oil change, $69.95, $59.95. And that was as recent as maybe 5 to 8 years ago, which is not that recent. But cars go... Some cars will go 7,500 miles to 10,000 miles with synthetic oil changes required, and they all have computers. He mentioned the fact that the car had a computer in it, which didn't didn't turn on to say you need to take it into oil change until he had gotten 7,500 miles on it. And I think he said the dealer's sticker on the windshield for the next oil change was something like 5,000 miles. With that, I think we'll wind up this edition of Car Keys with Jay DeMarkin and Robin Leach.
Car Keys with Robin Leach and Jay DeMarkin is produced at the facilities of WHDD 91.9 FM, RobinHoodRadio.com, Sharon, Connecticut.